Hello and welcome to Truth in Journalism, a radio broadcast dedicated to applying the Word of God to current events. Well, today on Truth in Journalism, we're going to talk about tuition. Our story is from the LA Times editorial board and is entitled, A New Extracurricular, Suing Colleges for a COVID-19 Tainted Experience. Among the many millions who have gotten a raw deal this spring are college students who were suddenly told by their school to pack up, head home, and spend the rest of the semester learning online. For some of them, especially foreign students with no place to stay and no way to get home, it was a nightmare. It was less than ideal, to be sure, but most college students have families and homes where they're able to go. They're still receiving an education, the same course credits as always, and for seniors, a degree, albeit one minus the big stage-walking event. Most of them have their devices and internet access needed to attend classes in the intellectual maturity to complete their work. Colleges refunded money for the room and board that wasn't getting used, yet some colleges are demanding partial tuition refunds too. Lawsuits have been filed against more than two dozen colleges and universities, including Ivy League and state schools, claiming that online courses simply aren't the same as those taught in classrooms, even when the same professors are teaching. Of course they're not. Although online courses can be a valuable way to learn and some students prefer them, most college students would rather have face-to-face instruction and the chance to interact with classmates and instructors. Certainly, chemistry and other laboratory science courses lack the hands-on touch on the internet. The students are also missing out on parties, extracurricular activities, events, strolling and sitting around campus, so many moments that make up our romantic dream of the college experience. Nobody wanted campuses to shut down, but then nobody wanted most of what's happening over the last 2 months. Extraordinary numbers of people are taking a devastating hit in their lives, whether it's getting furloughed or laid off, watching nest eggs dive in the stock market, struggling with loneliness and depression, working in places that put them in danger of infection, feeling sick for weeks with COVID-19, or losing a loved one. College tuition is crazy expensive, and parents who have paid it understandably think they're not getting their money's worth. But colleges also have faced extra costs as they've shifted suddenly from campus-based to computer-based. They still must pay professors who still must teach the courses. They have to deep clean their campuses and maintain buildings and grounds, most of them paid to send low-income and foreign students home. And they are losing money from the closed dormitories. In a way, families are very much getting their money's worth, an adapted education in the face of an unprecedented shutdown. That doesn't absolve schools of all financial responsibility. Colleges should refund the student activity fees they've collected for concerts and events that never took place, an obvious step that some schools have refused to take. Schools also should provide refunds to any students who can prove that the shift online kept them from being able to complete their education on time, costing them extra money. In addition, there's a moral obligation to reach out to students who are homeless or who are in need. It will be imperative to increase financial aid next year to those low and moderate income families, and a lot more families will qualify after the job losses this spring. And that's where these lawsuits could go horribly wrong. Colleges will have to make ends meet somehow, and if they pay out millions of dollars in tuition refunds because academic plans changed through no fault of their own, they might be compelled to increase tuition sharply in the fall and reduce financial aid in coming years. No one wins. It's the lesson of the pandemic. Nothing is perfect. Few remain unscathed. We give up something, an idyllic college experience, perhaps, for a greater good. Okay, so this is a story that I actually heard about earlier in the week. My wife told me about this thing. She says, did you hear that students are suing the colleges? And I looked through and I saw that the LA Times had this editorial, and I thought that they did a fairly good job laying out the case, because I think that they pointed out something in their story. They didn't out and out say it, but I think they pointed something out, which is everyone is wrong in this. Like, everyone is wrong. The students are wrong because they're suing colleges for ultimately something that was outside of the college's control. Do colleges sell the college experience? Absolutely they do. Does that constitute breach of contract or even an implicit contract if the campus experience is eliminated? Yeah, it constitutes breach. However, this was completely outside of the college's control. So on the one hand, you feel for the students. On the other hand, you kind of want to side with the college. But this just proves that both parties are wrong. Colleges are claiming they can't refund students for the loss of the college experience, and they're in that position for a couple reasons. One, education, particularly the liberal arts and education in the humanities, is largely an open joke in this country. Major universities are giving out BAs for very little work. In fact, in a 2015 study, English majors in 48 out of 52 colleges and universities English majors could get an English degree without ever having to study Shakespeare. How can you claim to have an advanced knowledge of English if you haven't taken a class on the second most important piece of English literature ever? By the way, the most important would be the King James Bible, and there ain't a nowhere that's going to force you to study the King James. But big education has hurt itself by turning colleges and universities into diploma mills. And that's not a controversial statement, by the way. At least it oughtn't to be. Indeed, Forbes research in 2016 showed that learning was at the bottom of the list of why students are going to college. The bottom of the list. They go to get a degree, they go to network, they go to have fun, they go to build an identity. The last thing on their list is learning material. The internet age has proven that you can acquire content without incurring hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt. Colleges can say that they're places of learning, and they are, but that's not the primary or secondary or tertiary or quaternary reason why students go. So colleges pretending that on-campus students are there to learn, and that's the only reason they're learning, and so therefore because they're getting content provided, that they're not losing out on anything, that's a preposterous statement. On its face, that's preposterous. Second, education in America is overwhelmed with bloated administrations in ludicrous departments, which are mere indoctrination seminars and not places of actual learning. Again, this is not a secret. This is openly known. According to another Forbes article, and I'm quoting here, during the 1980-1981 school year, public and private institutions spent $20.7 billion in total on instruction and $13 billion on academic support, student services, and institutional support combined. According to data from the National Center for Educational Statistics, by the 2014-15 school year, total instructional costs had climbed to $148 billion, while at the same time, grouping of administrative costs expanded to $122.3 billion. Put another way, administrative spending comprised just 26% of total educational spending by American colleges in 1980-1981, while instructional spending comprised 41%. 3 decades later, the two categories were almost even, administrative spending making up 24% of the school's total expenditures, while instructional spending made up 29%. So, you want to know why college is so expensive? It's not because there are too many professors teaching obscure subjects. It's because of non-educational costs. Less than a third of a student's tuition actually goes towards education, at least in the way we normally think of it. President James Garfield once described the ideal education is where Mark Hopkins sat on one end of a log and a student sat on the other. Great teachers and great educators are worth their weight in gold. Everyone knows this. And it doesn't matter whether the great teacher is, you know, an old woman teaching techniques of illuminated manuscripts or a chain-smoking, hard-bitten fabricator teaching an apprentice how to work with metal. A great educator is someone who is worth a great deal. Most reasonable people are willing to have professors earn a good living. And most reasonable and thoughtful people are happy to have great professors teach and do scholarly research to advance the state of the art or their particular discipline. Most reasonable people, however, are not willing to pay through the nose so that schools can hand out condoms and have diversity police. Most reasonable people know and accept that college is formative and that part of what tuition is for is for the college experience. However, most reasonable people think that colleges using that as an excuse to turn their institutions into diploma mills is bad faith in the extreme. People feel for the students filing these suits because deep down we feel like colleges have been selling a bill of goods and we're glad somebody is calling them out on it, even if that somebody is also wrong. On the other hand, it seems like a good portion of the students filing these suits are wrong, right? They're wrong because these are unusual circumstances and they cannot possibly reasonably expect everything to continue on as normal while we are in these very unusual circumstances. And this reminds me that sometimes in life, everyone is wrong. I know that sounds crazy. I know that in America, we're always supposed to pick a side. You got to pick a side. That's what our news is about. That's what our TV is about. That's what our sports are about. Everything is about picking a side. But sometimes you can't pick a side because everybody's wrong, right? Everybody's wrong. Modern American society, it's all about taking sides, but right now, there's no side to take because everybody's wrong. Colleges are wrong to charge so much and deliver so little. Students are wrong to not recognize that sometimes drastic times call for drastic measures, and part of being an adult and a mature, fully functioning human being is recognizing that sometimes things are outside of people's control and you can't hold them responsible for that. Now, what's my take? Students shouldn't sue for missing out on the college experience. And I'm doing big air quotes here when I say the college experience. And colleges need to drastically reduce costs and stop selling people a bill of goods. In short, people need to deal honestly and act in good faith. And the Bible talks about this. Indeed, one of my very favorite stories of all time is in Judges chapter 9. And the key to this story in the Bible is about good faith. This is a story very worth reading, especially in Hebrew, by the way. We're not going to read it in Hebrew, but if you do read Hebrew, please read Judges 9 because it's a wonderful story in Hebrew. But anyways, we got to move on. Go to Judges 9 if you're not already there. Go to Judges 9 and we see a great story about what happens when people refuse to act in good faith. Judges chapter 9. Abimelech, son of Jerubbaal, went to his brothers in Shechem and said to all of his mother's clan, ask all the citizens of Shechem, which is better for you, to have all 70 of Jerubbaal's sons rule over you, or just one man? Remember, I am your flesh and blood. When his brothers repeated all this to the citizens of Shechem, they were inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, he's related to us. They gave him 70 shekels of silver for the temple of Baal-berith, and Abimelech used it to hire reckless scoundrels who became his followers. He went to his father's home in Ophrah, and on one stone murdered 70 brothers, the sons of Jerubbaal. But Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, he escaped by hiding. Then all the citizens of Shechem and Beth Milo gathered beside the great tree at the pillar of Shechem to crown Abimelech king. When Jotham was told about this, he climbed on top of Mount Gerizim and shouted to them, listen to me, citizens of Shechem, so that God may listen to you. On the day the trees went out to anoint a king for themselves, they said to the olive tree, be our king. But the olive tree answered, should I give up my oil, which both gods and human beings are honored by, to hold sway over the trees? Next, the trees said to the fig tree, come and be our king. But the fig tree replied, should I give up my fruit, so good and sweet, to hold sway over the trees? Then the tree said to the vine, come and be our king. But the vine answered, should I give up my wine, which cheers both gods and men, to hold sway over the trees? Finally, they said to the thorn bush, come and be our king. The thorn bush said to the trees, if you really want to anoint me king over the trees, come and take refuge in my shade. But if not, then let fire come out from the thorn bush and consume the cedars of Lebanon. Have you acted honorably and in good faith by making Abimelech king? Have you been fair to Jerubbaal and his family? Have you treated him as he deserves? Remember that my father fought for you and risked his life to rescue you from the hand of Midian. But today you have revolted against my father's family. You have murdered his 70 sons on a single stone and have made Abimelech, the son of his female slave, king over the citizens of Shechem because he's related to you. So have you acted honorably and in good faith toward Jerubbaal and his family today? If you have, may Abimelech be your joy, and may you be his too. But if not, let fire come out from Abimelech and consume you, the citizens of Shechem and Beth Milo. And may fire come out from you, the citizens of Shechem and Beth Milo, and consume Abimelech. So that's a pretty intense story, right? What's going on? Well, remember Gideon? He was called Jerubbaal. He's the guy that fought the Midianites. Remember that he had the trumpets and he had the torches that were underneath the jars, and they broke them, and the Midianite camp went insane, right? And he saved their lives. And they said to Gideon, they said, Gideon, be our king. And he says, I won't be my king, and my sons won't be your king. But you know, but God's gonna be your king. And they say, yay, hooray for Gideon. He's so great. And well, Gideon has 70 kids. He has 70 sons. And one of them, Abimelech, the son of a slave woman, the son of a concubine, he rises up and takes power. And Jotham, and then he goes on to murder his brothers, and they want to appoint him king. And Jotham is pointing out to the people of Shechem that they were not dealing in good faith with Gideon and his kids. And Abimelech wasn't dealing in good faith with the citizens of Shechem. They were both wrong. The Shechemites were wrong to be willing to make Abimelech their king and to murder the sons of Gideon. Abimelech was wrong in wanting to rule over the Shechemites and murder his brothers. They were both acting in bad faith. And it led to the destruction of both parties. The Shechemites died by Abimelech's hand, and Abimelech died in a battle when a woman dropped a millstone on his head. When people do not deal in good faith with each other, it leads to a total breakdown in society. Societies break down when people act with evil and corrupt intent and try to take advantage of one another. Now, I know, right? You're thinking, yeah, that's obvious, Luke. Like, you're not telling us anything special. Like, who told you you were a preacher? Like, everybody knows that. Yeah, everybody knows that, and yet people continue to act in bad faith, knowing that it's destructive. Why? Because people are greedy and selfish. Paul warns the church in Galatia. He says, if you keep on biting and devouring one another, you're going to be destroyed by one another. Paul is telling the church in Galatia, stop acting in bad faith or you're going to undo everything worth having. In America, we need to learn that lesson. We need to learn that we need to act in good faith with each other. We need to act honorably and honestly with each other. We need to learn to treat each other with love and respect and dignity and to stop trying to exploit and take advantage of each other. In America, we need to learn to act in good faith, or we will destroy each other. I hope and pray we will. And I hope you'll join us again next week for another exciting episode of Truth in Journalism. Thank you, and may God bless your day to his glory.